thing here is, one, know that we're making a change from owner earnings or free cash flow to earnings. Two, we're making a change from pricing a company as a private company to valuing a company as a public company, which, if you remember, typically doubles the price. And three, therefore, our results may be a bit different from the payback time and 10-cap methods. The easiest way to think about it, Dad started, is to figure out the rate of return you need to get each year on your money to make the risk worthwhile. Over many years, I've found a good, solid rate of return for stocks is 15% per year. In other words, a 15% compounded return rewards me well for doing the work and taking the risk. Dad calls this 15% return his minimum acceptable rate of return, or MARR, or MAR. We use the MAR to figure out how much to invest today to get some higher amount in 10 years. The higher I set the MAR, the lower my investment will be. 15% is high enough for the risk of investing, but low enough to find reasonable value. I went with it. I got my margin of safety valuation by estimating what I expect to sell the company for in 10 years. Then, worked backward using a 15% MAR and basic algebra to arrive at the price I'm willing to pay. All of the following information about the margin of safety method is available for your reference on the PDF as well. Summary of margin of safety method. Purpose. Calculate what I expect to sell the company for down the line in 10 years, then work backward using basic algebra to arrive at the price I'm willing to pay. Required numbers. Earnings per share, EPS. Windage growth rate. Price to earnings, PE, ratio. Minimum acceptable rate of return, MAR. New numbers again. These margin of safety numbers, though, are easily obtained. And having been through the crucible of deciphering and calculating owner earnings and free cash flow, I learned these numbers quickly. They don't require reading footnotes on the financial statements. The margin of safety numbers were like a vacation. Here's how to prep them. Numbers needed to calculate margin of safety price. Earnings per share. Earnings per share is the whole company earnings number divided by the number of shares outstanding. How to find it? Provided on the income statement. Example, the lemonade stand. The lemonade stand as a company has $2,000 of earnings per year and has 100 shares. So its earnings per share is $20. $2,000 divided by 100 equals $20 per share. Windage growth rate. The growth rate expected for the company, chosen by reviewing the big four growth rates and understanding the business well enough to be comfortably certain of the future. How to find it? We know this one already. Yay for having to decide it way back when we were working on Moat. Doesn't that seem like a simpler time when taking an educated guess at a growth rate was intimidating? A growth rate. We've come a long way, baby. Example, the lemonade stand. The lemonade stand's windage growth rate is 16%. Windage price to earnings, PE, ratio. Price divided by earnings, or the ratio of how many times the earnings go into the price. Like the Shiller PE, which indicates if the whole market is under or overpriced, the PE ratio of a single company describes the relationship between the price and the earnings of the company. Because it's a ratio, it will be the same number regardless of whether it uses whole company numbers or per share numbers, as long as they're consistent. How to find it? Use the lowest of these two options. Option 1. Multiply 2 times the windage growth rate number. Lose the percent symbol. This is a straight number. Option 2. The historical highest PE of that company of the last 10 years. Readily available online. Example, the lemonade stand. Option 1. 16 times 2 equals 32. Option 2. The PE of the lemonade stand in the past has been 19, 22, and 20. Therefore, the highest historical PE was 22. Windage PE. The lowest of those two options is 22. Minimum acceptable rate of return, MAR. How much annual return we require for every year our money is tied up in this investment. How to find it. It's always 15%. Example, the lemonade stand. It's always 15%, even for the lemonade stand. I'm going to read you the plain English version, and my dad will read you the math version. Step 1. First, work forward in time 10 years. What should the price of this company reasonably be in 10 years? We know that the price will be a multiple of the earnings per share. So, let's find out what the earnings per share will be in 10 years. Grow the earnings per share by the windage growth rate each year, getting the future EPS for that year for 10 years, equals future 10-year earnings per share.
Math version. EPS times 1 plus windage growth rate, repeated 10 times, equals future 10-year earnings per share. Can be done manually year by year or on a spreadsheet.
Step 2. Multiply the future 10-year earnings per share by the windage PE equals future 10-year share price. Now, I know what the price of one share will be in 10 years.
Math version. Future 10-year earnings per share multiplied by the windage PE equals future 10-year share price. Remember, the windage PE is the lower of 2 times the windage growth rate or the high historical PE.
Step 3. Now, work backward to find out what the price should be today, not what it's actually selling for on the market. We'll check that later. With a 15% return each year. To find out what the price should be today with a 15% return each year, use this formula. Future 10-year share price divided by 1.15 to the exponent of years equals sticker price. With a 15% MAR, the bottom portion of that formula with the numbers plugged in is 1.15 to the number of years. With 10 years, that makes it 1.15 to the 10th power, which equals 4. Always. It always equals 4. So as long as we're using a 10-year period and 15%, my bottom number is 4. That's what a reasonable price for this company is today. Yay! But wait, what about Charlie's margin of safety?
Math version. Future 10-year share price divided by 1.15 to the power of the number of years equals sticker price. Or future 10-year share price divided by 4.
Step 4. The margin of safety is half the sticker price. Sticker price divided by 2 equals margin of safety by price.
Math version. Sticker price divided by 2 equals margin of safety by price.
There's a long-standing relationship between the growth rate of a company and its price-to-earnings ratio, and they usually end up being about double in public companies. My dad has, through experience, found that twice the windage growth rate is an accurate and easy stand-in for the PE ratio. So that is the margin of safety formula, step by step, for us manual mathematicians. My dad has also laid out his Excel process. Once I broke it down into steps, bringing the math forward in time and then back in time to today, I had a logical picture that made sense. That's what Nuno meant when he told me he doesn't remember equations or formulas. I wouldn't remember this one, exactly, but I could summon it by thinking about the process. I ran it through the lemonade stand, which you can view in detail on the enhancement PDF. Margin of safety method example, the lemonade stand. Numbers recap. Earnings per share, $20. Windage growth rate, 16%. Windage PE ratio, 22. Minimum acceptable rate of return, 15%. Formula. Step 1. EPS times 1 plus the windage growth rate, repeated 10 times, equals the future 10-year EPS. The future 10-year EPS is $88.23. Step 2. Future 10-year earnings per share multiplied by the windage PE equals the future 10-year share price. $88.23 times 22 is $1,941.06. Step 3. Future 10-year share price divided by 1.15 to the exponent of years equals divided by 4. $1,941.06 divided by 4 is $485.27. Step 4. Sticker price divided by 2 equals the margin of safety buy price. $485.27 divided by 2 is $242.64.
A note from Phil. It is easy to calculate the MOS for the lemonade stand using Excel. The equations are called present value and future value, and in Excel, it is equals PV, paren paren, and equals FV, paren paren. When you type that in, Excel presents the formula, and it tells you what to put in it. First, we grow the current earnings for 10 years with the Excel formula equals FV, paren paren. Use the windage growth rate, the number of years, and the EPS. Equals FV paren 16%, comma, 10, comma, comma, minus 20, end paren. FV paren rate, comma, n per, comma, payment, comma, PV, comma, type, end paren. Note that we are not using the PMT part of the formula, so to skip that part, just type another comma. Also, notice that I put a minus sign in front of the $20 for PV. Excel needs that sign to know that the $20 is going into the business in order to tell us what earnings come out of it in 10 years. The answer we get is $88.23. That is the EPS that the company should be making 10 years from now if our estimate for growth is correct. Now we can figure out what the business should be worth 10 years from now. Just multiply the PE ratio, 22, times the future EPS, $88.23. We get $1,941.06. Excel calls that future value. How much per share the business should sell for if it earns $88.23 in that 10th year and is still likely to grow at 16% per year. Now we can decide what someone would reasonably pay for that business today. It looks like this. Equals PV paren 15%, comma, 10, comma, comma, minus 1,941.06, end paren. PV, comma, rate, comma, n per, comma, payment, comma, FV, comma, type, end paren. The rate is the MAR. The n per is the number of years back to today. Skip the payment. And the FV is the future value of the business in 10 years. Don't forget to put in the minus sign. Hit return. The value of the business today is $479.79 per share, a bit different than the manual calculations due to Excel's formula, but close enough. Then divide by 2 to get the margin of safety buy price, $239.90.
And crazily, I totally got it. 4 steps and done. 4! I could do 4. For the lemonade stand, which has 100 shares, the 10 cap gave me a buy price of $200 per share. the 8-year payback time buy price is $247. And the margin of safety calculation put the sticker price at roughly $480 and the margin of safety price at about $240. Of course, the lemonade stand was not for sale. Business was too good. "Dad," I announced, "I am done. I can do the 3 valuations. This is completely amazing. Thank you, Dad. I didn't think this moment would happen." He laughed and said, "I knew you could do it." I side-eyed that one. Had he really? "Yeah," he emphasized. "I absolutely knew that you could do it. You've learned so much, and you've shown me a better way to do pricing and valuation. The only option was to find a way through it together." "Together," I repeated. "Yep, together. No question. It's downhill from here." We said our goodbyes. I don't think someone who finds this stuff easy can truly empathize with how difficult it can be. But that was okay with me. It was a feeling I've rarely had in my life. I had conquered what seemed unconquerable. I felt powerful. Charlie would probably be completely dismissive of my trials, but I had managed to complete a formula for valuation, which I had partly figured out on my own, and I sent him a silent thank you. And I thanked myself. I had had no thought of what it would be like to be successful at this, and I suppose I would have liked to have done a backflip or danced around the house. Instead, I sat in my desk chair and grinned. I just sat there and grinned. I grinned until my eyes were tiny and I could barely see out of them, and then I laughed out loud, alone, like a crazy person. All this joy from conquering a little old valuation formula. And then I realized it was late and I should go to bed, and I had a great night of sleep. The sleep of the mathematician. I highly recommend it. In the morning, I practiced on Whole Foods. It was easier than I had expected. My calculations are all written out in the PDF. For Whole Foods, I had calculated whole company prices using the 10-cap and payback time methods. To compare the per share result in the margin of safety method, I had to divide those whole company prices by the number of shares Whole Foods had outstanding. The number of shares is another windage number, unfortunately, because the number changes all the time. The 10K showed Whole Foods share numbers had been dropping. 360 million shares, then 349 million, then the introductory note in the 10K said 341 million. I searched online, and my dad's website and Yahoo Finance agreed. So I went with 341 million shares. Using that windage number, I got the following prices for Whole Foods. 10 cap, total $9.82 billion, about $29 per share. 8-year payback time, total $4.2 billion, about $13 per share. Margin of safety, about $19 per share. I purposely rounded my numbers to remind me that this was not a precise science. There was a lot of windage, and what I had was a range from which to decide what price made sense. That was all I could take. I would decide later how those prices shook out. I was going to call it a day on my practice and buy myself a chocolate cupcake, I decided. It was so painful to read financial statements that I had to bribe myself with a treat afterwards. Then I remembered I was still in Switzerland and cupcakes didn't commonly exist there. Still, in that moment, no matter. I was going to celebrate my achievement. I wandered into the kitchen and opened the fridge and saw champagne. Yes! I deserved champagne. Equation champagne. I looked at the bottle. Fine, it was Prosecco. I deserved Prosecco. Noons, I yelled. I'm opening the Prosecco. It's 11 a.m., he yelled back. It was already popped open. Done with financial statements, bubbly. Nectar of the gods. After about half a bottle, I was feeling pretty good about myself. So I started bragging to Nuno about my mad math skills. And then I just... logically, as you suggested, figured out how the earnings per share relates to the future share price, and I can tell you all about it. I started explaining the 3 valuation methods to him, because if I could help someone else, I would. I was giving back, just like Oprah tells me to do. But each of my explanations broke down about halfway through, trailing off into confusion and mixed up numbers. I was going to have to practice more, to really ingrain the equations into my head, I realized. At that thought, I drank more Prosecco. Then I fell asleep. Napping. I highly recommend it. It's another good self-bribe. 0 calories and $0. After I woke up, I mentally reviewed my investing practice status. I had learned 3 valuation methods. Suddenly, like a brick wall had landed in front of me, I mentally stopped short. Each method had given me dramatically different results. I called my dad in a hungover semi-panic. How would I decide what price made sense? "Yup," he proclaimed, "you will sometimes get dramatically different results from those 3 methods. Because they're all measuring different things. Payback time is often the most accurate and most useful, because it's based on free cash flow, and it includes the potential of the business to grow that free cash flow larger and larger into the future. But in Whole Foods' case, they're spending a huge amount of their cash on growing the business by opening new stores. That is likely to add a lot of free cash flow in the future, but it is reducing free cash flow now, and that means the 8-year payback time buy price is going to be lower than the other pricing methods. If you want to know if you're really stealing it, the 10 cap based on owner earnings works quite well. If you can buy a wonderful public business at 10 times owner earnings, that's a really good deal, because it doesn't require future growth to be a successful investment. And the margin of safety formula gives you a conservative public company value. Margin of safety method, Whole Foods. Numbers needed. 2015 earnings per share, EPS, $1.48. Windage growth rate. 1, historical growth rates during 2009 to 2015 averaged 16.7%. 2, analyst average 5-year growth estimate, 14%. The lower of 16.7% and 14% is 14%. Therefore, the windage growth rate is 14%. Windage price to earnings ratio. Option 1, 14 times 2 is 28. Option 2, Whole Foods had a range of PE ratios of 10 to 46 over the last 10 years. The high was 46. Windage PE. The lower of 28 or 46 is 28. Therefore, the windage PE is 28. Minimum acceptable rate of return. 15%, because it's always 15%. Formula. Step 1. EPS times 1 plus the windage growth rate repeated 10 times equals the future 10-year EPS. The future 10-year EPS is $5.49. Step 2. Future 10-year EPS multiplied by the windage PE equals future 10-year share price. $5.49 times 28 equals $153.72. Step 3. Future 10-year share price divided by 1.15 to the exponent of years, which equals divided by 4. $153.72 divided by 4 is $38.43. Step 4. The sticker price divided by 2 equals the margin of safety buy price. $38.43 divided by 2 is $19.21. The margin of safety formula gives us the value of the business as a publicly traded business, and then discounts it by half to protect against, as Charlie said about his fourth principle, the vicissitudes of life. These 3 ways of getting to a buy price are another form of windage growth rate situation. I had to make a judgment call. And now, I had to add to my checklist that I had started earlier and finally create some points for Charlie's fourth principle. 4. Reasonable price with margin of safety. What is the 10 cap buy price? What is the 8-year payback time buy price? What is the margin of safety buy price? It was now up to me to practice and correctly apply all of the pricing formulas. I let the thought float without judging it. I noticed how it made me feel. Rather than making me feel the enclosed concrete stairwell feeling that it would have only a few months earlier, it made me feel powerful. I knew what I was doing, for goodness sake. I was in the investor party with an old-fashioned in hand, feeling comfortable. Okay, fine. A lot of other people had been there a lot longer than I had and knew a lot more. Big deal. I knew enough to be there, and not as a wallflower anymore. I suddenly felt curious about buying stock for real. I started to feel like it was going to be time, very soon, to actually put serious money into the stock market. I knew my dad had told me I wasn't to buy stock during this year. But surely just opening a brokerage account wouldn't hurt, right? I'd use it eventually. I hadn't seen one in a long time, and I wanted to see what the real thing looked like now. Opening a brokerage account. I searched online for brokerage account, and one came up that was a company I had heard of before. So I figured it was fine, and went with it. I answered the questions over about 15 minutes, and voila, my account was open. I transferred some money into the account, and the site said it would be available the next day. Easy peasy. It was so easy, I was a little surprised. Shouldn't there be a minimum competence exam or something? I wasn't even sure how to buy a stock. Indeed, the site's homepage was not so easy peasy. It was a mess of information, news, numbers, stock symbols, and research tabs. I could see my money was provisionally there in the account. Probably to encourage me, they showed the money as available, but I wanted it to stay put. I did not want to accidentally press the wrong button on this messy homepage with real money and real stocks and commit to buying $8 million of Apple and have Tim Cook coming after me for the money. I was not good for it. Actually, that would probably barely pay for their free employee lunches. Apple wouldn't even notice such a paltry stock purchase. Shnikes, I thought as I looked at the stock symbols and buttons on the homepage. Stuff was getting real, real fast. Practice, I told myself. This is a practice. Breathe. Don't buy anything. Don't touch anything. Just breathe. I felt like I did the first time I ever picked up a small handgun. That was also under my dad's watchful eye when I was about 14. There was a small indoor shooting range in our town in the basement of a downtown office building, and my dad took me there. I suppose, like thinking I'd better have a good argument under his Socratic method questioning, he thought it was time I learned to be comfortable with a weapon. The gun was unloaded, and I knew it was unloaded because my dad showed me the empty chamber. But when I picked it up, I was afraid of its power. Maybe we missed seeing a round in there, I thought. He showed me again that it was unloaded. I got a little more comfortable with it. Then he laid down the rules. Never, ever act like a gun is not dangerous, he emphasized. Treat a gun at all times as though it is loaded. We do that because it's easy to forget to check for bullets, easy to get nervous and overeager and make a mistake, and it is easy to pull the trigger. A deadly weapon demands respect. There, with my newly opened brokerage account, I made sure not to hover the mouse over any buy buttons. I felt like the gun was loaded, even though I could see that it wasn't. This was investing safety. I respected investing's power to move money to change my life in the right direction or the wrong direction, and treated it accordingly. I didn't tell my dad about fantasy investing or opening the brokerage account. I didn't think he'd understand taking these baby steps. He had also said he didn't want me to buy any stock this year, and I wasn't sure if the brokerage account qualified as being part of the verboten category. Still, I felt like I was making progress, not just mentally, but physically as well. That month, I had felt so much better in my body that I stopped taking my stomach medication. I had wanted to get off it ever since starting. And not being attached to those little pills every day felt like freedom all by itself. I should still be sick, I thought, with flying across the world all the time and my investing practice taking up my minimal free time. But those extra non-work things made me so happy that my body seemed to be responding to that rather than how busy and overscheduled I still was. Not that everything was all lightness and rainbows. Just before leaving for the airport at the end of the weekend, I checked my fantasy investing spreadsheet. 4 of my 5 companies had gone down in price on the market. I blinked and looked away. My heart sank. I felt so disappointed. Suddenly I realized that I had expected to be secretly and magically good at this investing hullabaloo. I had expected to be a wunderkind, to be able to say, oh golly, I just chose what looked good to me, and it worked out. It hadn't. My companies were down. I suddenly felt a visceral fear of making a mistake with real money. I remembered the emotional rule of investing. Everything goes down once you buy it, and it's because you bought it. It was funny at the time. It was less funny now. I knew that short-term volatility was not relevant in long-term value investing, but what if this dip was indicative of a larger trend? What if I had really made a mistake? I let that sink in. I always wanted to get an A+ instead of an A, and asked for extra homework in first grade. Nope, I was not ready to invest real money in this harebrained idea of mine to learn to invest by myself. I was scared. Again. I had to find out where the holes in this practice were. August practice. Calculate the margin of safety price of each of the 3 companies you have already valued. Compare the 3 prices you've calculated for each company and decide on your buy price. Most important, reward yourself with a treat. Chapter 9. Inverting the story. September. This month. Checklist of expensive errors. Writing the story. Inverting the story. Practice shares. All right, so I had screwed up and missed something. I could live with that. I mean, I couldn't at all, but whatever. The sun would come up tomorrow morning and I would debate whether I should commit my own money to my own judgment. What had I missed? As with people, falling in love with a company doesn't happen very often. So when it does happen, it's so tempting to dismiss or explain away negative impressions. Behavioral economists call this confirmation bias, when we tend to believe people in our environment who have views that agree with ours, without even realizing it. In fact, it's so tempting to dismiss anything negative about the company we love that researchers have found we actually avoid doing so on a subconscious level. Having to admit that my dear company has flaws is painful, and I find myself clapping back with the immediate thought, they just don't get it. My own views when researching a company are, at first, naturally skeptical. However, I want to find wonderful companies badly enough that when one looks promising, I switch sides pretty quickly to believing in that company. Their mission suddenly is fantastic. I can understand the company. Their management looks strong and principled. It has a good moat, and even the financials look pretty good. I start getting excited. Company X might be a winner. I check the price. Holy moly, it's on sale. I read and read, and everything I find says that the company does great things in the world. It's a cool company. At that point, I love it. I want it. I'm all in. Was I allowing myself to be unconsciously emotionally swayed away from the facts? For the success of my investing practice, it was vital that I stay aware of my own confirmation bias. I had to be able to figure out a way to know what I didn't know. Buffett and Munger combat their confirmation bias by keeping each other around to shoot down investing ideas. Buffett has said many times that one of Charlie's joys in life is to tell him no. And he treasures Charlie for that, reiterating the point recently in his 2016 Berkshire Hathaway shareholder letter, writing, "I will commit more errors, you can count on that. Fortunately, Charlie, never bashful, is around to say no to my worst ideas." When he lived in New York, Guy Spier regularly met with a group of other investors he called the Posse to debate investing ideas, which saved him from missing some holes in a company he otherwise would have probably bought. I'm a lawyer, I reminded myself. I love to find the holes in an argument. If I could find the holes, I would find my mistakes. That's how I would not lose money. I was flying to Atlanta to record a block of podcasts with my dad over the weekend. Nuno and I were on a crappy stretch of too many weeks apart due to work and airplane tickets being expensive, and I was in a bad mood about it. So I wanted to at least use the time well and focus my energy on work. It would also be nice to have a few quiet days with my dad, grilling salmon on his Big Green Egg barbecue and getting to grill him during our podcasts. I wanted to ask my dad how he handled his own bias against finding the holes when he loved a company. Socrates was pretty good at making arguments. Did he try to argue against his own argument for a company? Oh, yeah, my dad said. Wanting a company to be awesome is a huge problem. It's probably the biggest problem I face. It's called confirmation bias, Dad. It's pretty well researched. Very cool. Well, here's what I do to avoid it. I have a checklist of expensive errors that other investors and I have all made. I have to answer every question on this checklist, and I don't get to cut corners. I've already worked on a checklist, I confirmed happily. Yeah, let's research a company together and see how this works. I sat next to him at his desk in his little office attached to his house, so we could look at the computer screen together. The plan was to start with Tesla, Whole Foods, or Lululemon, but before we sat down, we both grabbed cans of LaCroix sparkling water from the fridge. All of a sudden, it occurred to me, everyone I know has LaCroix water in their fridge. Kamala drinks it like, well, like water, pamplemousse water. Sparkling water was nothing new, and even fancy sparkling water like Perrier was certainly not new. LaCroix had been around for a while, but for some reason, everyone I knew was buying LaCroix. Dad said, let's look it up. So I guess we were starting with what was right in front of us at the moment, LaCroix. He searched online, found their website, and it turned out that they were owned by a public company called, ever so brilliantly, National Beverage Corp. He pulled up their most recent annual report, and we learned that they own a number of beverage companies and brands, but LaCroix is the only one we'd ever heard of. We looked at the moat and management numbers and the company's reports, and he ran a quick valuation to discover that he thought they were pretty overpriced. Footnote. National Beverage Corp. was overpriced according to its past performance. But since we ran that analysis together, National Beverage Corp.'s stock price has gone up dramatically. We weren't the only ones to notice we drank a lot of LaCroix, and no other competitors were touching it. But the company didn't have the track record to make it a rule number one company. C'est la vie. I had always thought of people who do this professionally, including my father, as being very different from me. They must have some secret sources of information that I couldn't access and probably shared them in dark speakeasies. At that moment, though, our initial research plan was exactly the same. Dad was much faster at it than I was, probably by a factor of about 10. But it was the same review. Check the company's website, get the basic information about what they do, review moat, review management, and determine what would be a good price. And I discovered that, all of a sudden, we had this process in common. I realized, sitting side by side at the desk together, that we shared the same language, at least a rudimentary version of it. I was speaking some business. I could travel a bit through that country now. I could ask where the bathroom was. He turned to me and smiled. This is pretty cool. I smiled right back at him. It was. Expensive Errors Checklist. All great investors have made mistakes, my dad went on. What matters is not the mistake itself. It's easy to get caught up in regret and all sorts of feelings about it, but that's not useful for the future. What should we do then? I don't want to make the same mistake twice. That's exactly the right way to think about it, Dad agreed. Avoid regret, but ruthlessly assess why you made that mistake. Harder than it sounds. A lot harder. What did you miss? What did you learn? Not the easiest questions to answer. In risk intelligence, which analyzes how people can more accurately determine risk. Spoiler, we humans are terrible at determining risk. Author Dylan Evans noted that expert gamblers who win or lose based entirely on assessing the odds and risk were brutally honest with themselves about their strengths and weaknesses by keeping notes and reviewing what worked and what did not. I was trying to do the opposite of gambling in my investing practice, but the methodology still applied. I still had to assess the risk of buying a given company using incomplete information and be ruthless with myself about my own errors of judgment. "What's the best way to look at my own screw-ups?" I asked my dad. "The best way is to not make them in the first place. Stick to what I'm teaching you so you get the benefit of 85 years of expensive mistakes that our family of investors already made. I keep a list of screw-ups that I cross-check companies against." He called it his expensive errors checklist. Between himself and other smart investors, including even Warren Buffett, a lot of errors have been made, and in hindsight, clear and basic facts were ignored by them. Instead of making these expensive errors myself, I could learn from them. Monish Pabrai keeps his checklist to only 7 questions. Dad keeps his list longer than that, but still short. He's afraid if it's too long that he'll skim it and miss something critical. Here's my dad's list of warning signs, which we've also included on the PDF. Basic errors that were there before the investments failed and caused expensive problems.
Expensive errors. Meaning. On edge or outside circle of competence. No gurus buying. Not a business I enjoy studying. Industry or company or product is not easy to understand. Did not do inversion. Industry on the decline. Unfriendly union. Demand for the product in 10 years is uncertain. Uncertain the company will be more productive in 10 years. Industry rate of change is high. Did not read 10 years of footnotes in 10K. Moat. Moat is not intrinsic. Moat is not durable. Moat is not being widened. Big four numbers are not growing. Book value plus dividends in particular is not growing. Owner earnings and free cash flow not predictable. Cheap foreign competition getting stronger but hasn't reached U.S. industry yet. Management. ROE and ROIC are going down. CEO does not act like an owner. CEO puts self first. CEO glosses over problems. CEO selling too much stock. Company buying back stock. Well above value. CEO recently replaced. Debt more than 2 years free cash flow. Debt increasing. Loan to expire soon. Loan covenants close to being breached by company. Pricing. Can't confidently calculate own earnings. Pay more than the 10 cap price. Or pay more than the 8-year payback time price, or pay more than the margin of safety price. Temporary issues making earnings and or free cash growth or losses abnormal. Earnings per share growth engineered via buybacks. Future growth rate and future PE estimates not realistic. There is no event and no price drop. Price dropped, but not enough of an event to go on sale. Event produces significant fear, but may not resolve itself in 1 to 3 years. Event may permanently damage the business. Can't understand the event. Too complex.
I noticed that pricing errors were way down on the list. Remember, Dad admonished me. Price is actually least important because time will fix errors on a wonderful business. If you buy a great company but pay too high a price, if it stays wonderful, it will eventually be worth more than you paid for it. You'll just have to wait longer. I laughed. You're telling me that one of my foibles is to get too hung up on price. Dad shrugged. Obviously, a great price is very important as a cushion against mistakes. However, if you get the business right, price becomes less of an issue. Probably true, I realized, and added it to my own checklist. What else do you do to protect yourself from confirmation bias? I also talked through my argument for a company with other investor friends who I trust and respect. We don't say whether we buy or sell a company, only the argument for it. And it includes the inverted story, the argument against a company. The idea is to change the story from a focus on buying and flip it to a focus on selling. You can't trust yourself to find the holes in an argument while you're making the argument. The only way is to flip it on its head and try to prove yourself wrong. Take your best three reasons to own this business and make each one a reason not to own it. For example, if I said Chipotle has a great moat, then the inversion is that Chipotle's moat is broken. So that's how he finds the holes and prevents his own confirmation bias. I confirmed. Cross-examine my own argument by proving the opposite. Exactly. It's harder than it sounds, because you just spent days or weeks or months getting excited about this company, building your interest, finding reasons you like this company a lot. Set your mind for this by agreeing with its opposite. Tell yourself, I should sell. Why? Can we try it out? Story. First, write the story. I got out my checklist, worked through it, and then I wrote my first complete story on Whole Foods. 1. The principles of investing. Let's take each one and apply it to Whole Foods. Understanding. This is a short overview of the company. What they do and how they do it. How did I find them? Preferably from a guru starting to buy them. If I can't explain it in one paragraph, I don't understand this company well enough. It's too hard. Whole Foods. Grocery industry. Whole Foods is the number one organic grocery store chain in the United States, which I found by shopping there. I love buying groceries at Whole Foods. They offer their own branded products and lots of products from small and large retailers, all vetted to meet their high standards of food sourcing, ingredients, and sustainability. Mission. Why I like it. The company's mission and the values they express in how they do business. Whole Foods. Their mission is to do good by doing well, to provide food products that support the planet to customers who want such products, and even to stay ahead of demand by educating customers to raise their standards. For example, Whole Foods' seafood sustainability rating system raised the industry standard, and customers came to expect to be informed about the source and sustainability of their seafood before buying. Moat. Who are their competitors? What intrinsic characteristic protects them from competitors? Whole Foods. Competitors have historically been other organic grocery stores because conventional grocery stores competed on price rather than quality. But Whole Foods has been so successful that conventional grocery stores have become their main competitors. Whole Foods' moat is a brand moat, and it remains one of the strongest brand moats in companies today. It stands for ethical food. Anyone who wants a great grocery shopping experience, absolute confidence that their food is consciously sourced, and products they can't get anywhere else will go to Whole Foods. And that will not change with conventional grocery stores offering organic food products. Management. Who is running the company and my opinion of their integrity and talent? Whole Foods. John Mackey is Whole Foods' founder and CEO, the man who led the organic food revolution for the last 40 years and now runs the company for minimal money. Whole Foods is his baby. He now has a co-CEO to bring the company into better competition with conventional grocery stores. Sensible price. Does it have a margin of safety? 10-cap buy price, based on owner earnings. Whole Foods, $29. Payback time buy price, based on free cash flow. Whole Foods, $13. Margin of safety buy price, based on earnings. Whole Foods, $19. 2. Three reasons. Three great reasons to own this company that relate to moat, management, or price. Whole Foods reason 1. I trust the management implicitly. Whole Foods reason 2. The brand moat will continue to provide high margins as consumers prefer Whole Foods above all other product providers. Whole Foods Reason 3. The industry will continue to grow fast and Whole Foods will be worth more in 10 years. 3. Event. Describe the event that has put this company on sale. Will it come out of it in not less than 1 and not more than 3 years? Whole Foods event. It is being attacked by conventional grocery stores on product prices and competitive products, and investors have freaked out about it, driving the price down from its high. Whole Foods is universally recognized as such a well-run company that it's unlikely its price will get any cheaper. Whole Foods will come out of it within 3 years by restructuring its operations, reducing its prices, and, most important, slowing its expansion. They were putting crazy amounts of cash into opening new stores, and once they pull back from doing so, they will have a lot of extra cash to fight this threat. Dad explained further. Now, take the reasons to buy and see if we can prove the opposite is true. Describe why it sucks and you don't want to buy it. Honestly, it's going to be difficult, I said. It's no fun to try to find holes in the argument I've made after I've already tied it all up in a nice little bow. It's not easy, but I know you've got that ruthlessness inside you. You and Charlie Munger are both lawyers, and Charlie invented this idea of inverting the story before deciding whether to buy a company. When asked by Harvard Business School to speak at their 1986 commencement, Charlie Munger said, "It is in the nature of things, as Jacoby knew, that many hard problems are best solved only when they are addressed backward." Jacoby is a famous mathematician who said, "Invert, always invert," as a formula for solving difficult problems. I smiled. The tradition of masters goes way back, no? It does indeed, Dad smiled back at me. Let's invert Whole Foods. Way to kill my baby, Dad. I loved Whole Foods like George Clooney loves tequila. For a good time that would hopefully lead to a lot of money. But, foine. For Whole Foods, I had massive inherent biases. My bubble was very real. Boulder was the birthplace of Whole Foods' only legitimate competitor, Wild Oats, which Whole Foods bought out in 2009. I lived in a town where people regularly discussed where their food was sourced from and what kind of company made it. They discussed where a food company was formed and who ran it. They discussed ingredients in great detail. So, when I researched Whole Foods, I totally got their mission. A mission that was obvious and successful and spreading. I kind of perversely liked the idea of testing Charlie's inversion on the company that would be the hardest for me. Inverting the story. The easiest way to get to a decent inverted story is to take each of the 3 reasons you want to buy this company and invert it, Dad explained. Then rebut each inversion. 1. Story inversion. Invert the 3 great reasons to own the company into 3 great reasons not to own this company. 2. Invert the inversion. Rebut each reason not to own. This is what we came up with for Whole Foods. Reason not to buy 1. Mackey is old, and new management has already demonstrated they aren't Mackey. Rebuttal. John is actually younger than my dad. And Dad isn't going off to play golf anytime in the next decade because he loves what he's doing. Mackey loves what he's doing too much to let his baby suffer. He will not go away until Whole Foods is back on track and back on top. Reason not to buy 2. The brand moat is unsustainable because organic food is rapidly becoming a commodity sold at Costco, and the Whole Foods experience will suffer as the company tries to compete on price. Rebuttal. Organic food cannot become a commodity because it's too specialized. I trust Whole Foods to deliver quality and choice I can't find anywhere else. Their brand moat is secured by how difficult it is to replicate their people, care, choices, suppliers, industry impact, and values at a price-driven enterprise. Reason not to buy 3. The industry will continue to grow fast, but Whole Foods' profit will shrink to conventional grocery store size and will be worth less in 10 years than it is today. Rebuttal. The global organic grocery market is expected to grow at 13% compounded annually. Whole Foods will continue to open smaller 365 brand stores and regular large format stores in select markets. In addition, it has started to offer delivery services to reach more customers. Even with lower profitability, its increase in size and continued growth of same-store sales point to a significantly larger and more valuable company in 10 years than today. Even at the 10 cap price, it is highly likely that this investment will make money over time. Wow, serious cross-examination. Absolutely. You've been worried about trusting yourself with your own money. This is how you become certain. It's not by magic. It's by ruthless examination. This is fantastic, Dad. He looked surprised, then grinned. Really? Yeah, I've been wondering how to protect myself from myself, and this does. I know I can argue anything away, so if it convinces me, it's probably a good bet. Inverting is totally doable, and I'm into it. You are genuinely excited about investing, Dad reflected. It makes me really happy. I want you to feel comfortable and safe with it so you can go out and start getting those 15, 20, 26% returns. Really, my dad was the one who prepared me to make an argument and to invert an argument. Plus, I half teased him, you trained me to do this from all those car rides you put me through. I realized that back then, he had been trying to help me the best way he knew how. He had been trying to prepare me for college and life by pushing me and prepping me to be pushed. Ha, he laughed, taken aback. I don't know, honey, I probably just scared you off, but you're doing a great job learning this, so I did something right. You did lots of things right, Dad. He cleared his throat. And now I'm going to add one more protection for you. Cool. If, after inverting each part of the story, this one becomes too hard to be certain, then it goes into the too hard pile. Just move it over from your wish list to the too hard list. Done. After all that research, seems like a waste of time. No time spent on investing research is ever a waste of time. If there's one thing I can impress upon you, it's that. Even if Whole Foods is too hard, the education you got from researching it can never be taken away from you. You'll use it for some other grocery store company in 10 years, or to see if a similar industry like retail meets your liking. It's research you can use to ruthlessly review your wins and losses by looking back in a few years, when you know what happens to Whole Foods, and determine if you missed something or you got it right. It's never a waste of time. I'd save my research and take my education and go forward. Never mess around with something that's too hard. But, Dad went on, if, after the inversion, you've actually become more certain about your analysis of the company, if inverting failed to convince you that it's not a wonderful company to buy, then you have finished your work and it goes on the wish list. If the price is right, you could buy it now. Okay, I'll try it on my own. You actually don't really ever have to come up with an inversion entirely on your own. I just call you? Dad laughed. Totally, yes, of course. But even more help is right on the internet. There are plenty of people who think that buying that company is a stupid idea and write about why. Oh, that's true, I realized. Analysts write articles about companies and put them online, don't they? Yup, Seeking Alpha, The Motley Fool, and other websites like those, plus news articles, have plenty of inverted arguments about companies. What's wrong with them? Why you shouldn't invest in them? Read all of it, and use other people's research to make the argument against the company. The questions the analysts ask on the quarterly phone calls are also a good indication of holes in the company's story, I would think. Sometimes, Dad hedged. Analysts on those calls soft-pedal everything and hardly ever really grill the CEO. Too bad. The calls would be so much more interesting if the analysts would push. Still, sometimes they do ask pointed questions that can highlight an inversion of the story. Ask yourself, if you agree with this person's point of view, how would you support it? I can see how I would get swayed right back to become totally against a company I was just in love with. I was starting to think I had unwittingly jumped on a pendulum of opinion, never to land at a final decision about a company. Here's the important bit, though, Companies are like horses. If you look deeply enough, there's something wrong with every single one of them. I laughed. Oh no. But is that problem enough to sink your story? Ah, I saw it then. I have to do both. Try to show that it's wonderful enough, and try to tear it down. I would write down the inversion.